Welcome to the Jacksonville High School 912 podcast, produced by Airstream Ventures. High School 912 is an initiative designed to help the youth throughout Jacksonville and the First Coast by creating change in our community. The programs with High School 912 are made possible by our sponsors, Baker's Sporting Goods, Bono's Barbecue, Duval Motor Company, the CSI Companies, Fortegra, LandSouth Construction, Adecco, the Arco Group, Farm Bureau Insurance, PGA Tour Superstore, U.S. Ashore, and Padgett & Padgett.
Welcome back to Season 2 of our Jacksonville High School 912 podcast. I'm Joel Lamp, and this week's guest is Justin Barney from WJXT Channel 4 and newsforjax.com, by far the top high school expert in the area. Justin, thanks for coming on and joining us.
No problem. Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
What we want to do with Justin is we're going to bring Justin in a couple times during the year at the beginning of each season to talk about what's going on in high school sports during that session of season. So right now, this will be our fall sports episode. We'll go over football, cross country, swimming, volleyball, and golf. But then we'll come back a couple more times and talk about the sports that are in season, find out a little bit about what's going on around the area, but also check in and talk about some of the things that are happening, the trends that are happening in high school sports that he sees from across the area. So we'll get this one started with the first one. We're a week after the Bold City Showcase that kicked off the high school football season. A great day of three football games at the Bold School. Three exciting games that now, as we morph into the season, is kind of used as a kickstart for everything. Give us your thoughts on that first Bold City Showcase.
Fantastic. You know, everything I heard from fans, from parents, from people not even in the area, you know, we got a lot of feedback from people, you know, even in California, up in Minnesota, people who watched it online and streamed it online, and just a fantastic response. Anytime you can do a high school event and treat these players, you know, like in a sense, college athletes or pro athletes, and showing them, you know, putting them on a platform where, you know, not all these guys and you know, in situations, girls too, and cheerleaders and stuff are going to be on TV and sports after, you know, after high school at all. So I think, you know, giving them an opportunity to be on there and, you know, to highlight them, highlight their schools, highlight the cheerleaders and the bands and stuff, I think that was a fantastic event. And, you know, it's, we have great sports in the area. We always have. And I think these events where you're putting things on TV and, you know, everything leading up to it was just fantastic. And the three games in one day, I mean, that's just not something you see too often. And three really good games and six great teams. So I think the whole day was just about as positive as you could ask for.
It was phenomenal from a fan standpoint. More than 21,000 fans in the stands. Obviously, the team at Channel 4 did a great job in putting on the broadcast, but also with our friends at 1010 with the radio side as well, having that kind of a platform that doesn't happen a lot. These kids, if they're not playing in the state championship, the chances of them playing on television are very few and far between.
Yeah, and you know, in the lead up to this, I believe there have been 13 games on TV since 2005. You know, 2005, Nice, when Tim Tebow really kind of started that that revolution of high school teams on TV. Nice played Hoover, Alabama in 2005, the first high school football game televised on ESPN. It was really cool to see that, and it's grown from there. But again, as you mentioned, you know, those are games with marquee, high-profile guys that do that. So, you know, we have maybe one of those a year, but not too often. And, you know, that's simply, you know, those ESPN games are done specifically for recruiting or to highlight one or two guys and not necessarily the entire programs. And, you know, I think what we did, what 1010 did, what Airstream did, and the other sponsors was highlight, you know, the breadth of this entire, you know, these entire programs, not just the athletes. And we highlighted teachers and bands and cheerleaders and kind of stories of these schools. And I think that's what made this broadcast different, is that it went beyond just looking at a Carson Beck or, you know, a high-profile guy like Trevez Johnson at Bartram Trail. I think this event from top to bottom was really about showcasing the schools, the communities around those, and the players there, not just one or two guys. So I think that's why it was so special. And to be on all those platforms, too, I think just made it a great event.
So as we dive into the football season full bore now, we're coming off a week that we got hurricaned out for the most part. Now everybody's getting caught up, and it's going to be like the MAC. We're going to have a game every day of the week, it seems like, for the next couple of weeks. Who are some of the teams to watch? And we'll start with the top two returning state champions, Mandarin and Reigns. They get all the headlines because they're coming off of state championships. Talk a little bit about those two teams and their chances at repeating.
I think repeating is going to be tough for both of those teams. I think with Mandarin, we've seen them play very well for two games. And I think the difference in Mandarin this year is just the depth in their district. It's very challenging, coupled with their graduation losses. It's just immense. Anytime you start with a Carson Beck at quarterback, it's going to be a huge leg up on the competition. As we saw in the Bold City Showcase, he is fantastic. He can throw a great deep ball. He's got some receivers emerging around him. That Mandarin team last year was just so special. Just, so many guys catching passes and helping Carson out, and the offensive line was solid. And this year you've graduated so many of those guys, and not saying Mandarin cannot do that. I just think last year was so special. I don't know if you can replicate that. And from Reigns, I think the biggest challenge we're going to see with Reigns is just you move up in class. They were 4A last year, 4A the year before, and they won state. So back-to-back champions in 4A, you're moving up to a different class. You're going to have one more round of the playoffs as you've had in the past. And these teams are playing, Reigns didn't have a tough game into the playoffs until the state championship game last year. So they had, basically three cakewalks in the first three rounds. In 5A, you're not going to have that. You're going to have difficult games week in and week out. We saw that with Trinity Christian when they made that leap up from 3A to 5A. You're playing teams that are bigger than you, a little bit more competitive than in, 3A. So I think that, you add that depth and classification and the teams you're going to play week to week, I think it's going to make it a tough road for Reigns to go back. And we saw that early. They lost Orlando Jones 40-15 in week one. So I think that just showcased, how difficult it is going to be for Reigns to repeat. But stranger things have happened.
Who are some of the other teams that are below the radar that we need to keep an eye on that can make a deep run this year from the area?
I don't know necessarily below the radar when I'm talking about these teams, but I think teams that, that may have a little bit of a surprise in them. I think Bartram Trail, we saw them in the Bold City Showcase. And, my questions with Bartram have been for a couple of years was their defense. And, their offense has been able to kind of shoulder the load with things. And the defense has been letting them down. And, we have a great case of that. We saw the Jaguars in week one. The defense kind of let the offense down. So I think that in a sense, has been Bartram Trail the last few years. Great teams, but given up a lot of points and a lot of yardage. So I think Bartram Trail, they're off to a 3-0 start, and their defense has played fantastic. I think, their offense is able to carry that load. Defensively, I think, is where the questions are, and they're off to a great start. And I look, around the area, I look at maybe a Fleming Island in Clay County for taking a step. Oak Leaf in Clay County gave our number one team, the area, Columbia, all kinds of problems a couple weeks ago. I think Columbia in 6A is a very, very strong contender for state championship. So I think those are the teams to watch out for, not necessarily any surprise teams. I think it's just these teams that we're putting some expectations on, going out and fulfilling them and kind of reaching their potential.
As we talk about some of those teams, who are some of the kids that we're seeing, that you've seen so far, that are turning heads and getting some extra looks recruiting-wise? I know everybody loves to follow. If you're a college fan, you're always following the recruiting rankings. But obviously everybody's heard about Carson Beck and what he's doing and him committing to Georgia. But who are some of these other kids that have a chance to be a standout as well in the next level?
I think a lot recruiting-wise, what brings the attention to the area are high-star guys and quarterbacks. Quarterbacks, you can have a five-star guy in the area like we did this year with Fred Davis, a five-star defensive back at Trinity Christian. He's committed to Clemson. We've had these high-profile defensive guys before, but I think what really brings the eyes to the area in terms of recruiting and bringing the fans in are the quarterbacks. And we mentioned Carson, and he's gotten a lot of accolades. He's Mr. Football last year at Elite 11. But you look across town at Sandalwood and Jeff Sims, quarterback there at Sandalwood, and he's an Elite 11 guy, just like Carson Beck. He actually ranked a little higher in the Elite 11 competition than Carson Beck. And the Elite 11, for those not familiar with it, it's a quarterback competition, started in the early 2000s, and quarterbacks from around the country are invited to a competition, and they compete for the 11 best quarterbacks in the country. Entering this season, we had two guys who had ever made the Elite 11. Tim Tebow back in 2005 and Kyle Parker, a Bartram Trail kid in 2007. So this year we have two of those guys in Carson Beck and Jeff Sims. So that just shows fans in the area that this year is something special. And it's not just Carson Beck. It's Jeff Sims as well at Sandalwood. He's been very solid this year. And I think he's a guy to watch out for. May have played a little bit in that shadow of Carson Beck, but I think Jeff is a fantastic player. You look across across town, receiver Tyree Saunders at First Coast hasn't played much this year because of an injury. He just committed to Virginia Tech. You're looking at Oak Leaf guys like Chance Williams and Jalen Rivers. You know, those are two of the highest rated guys in the entire country. Chance is defensive end, and Jalen's an offensive tackle. So I think there are guys, you know, Carson and Jeff being the headliners, but I think we've got some excellent, excellent depth. You know, we mentioned the Oak Leaf guys, the private school guys at Trinity Christian, Fred Davis, Miles Brooks, Kewan Herndon, running back, who's been fantastic this year. So a lot of guys. I don't know if it's the best class we've ever had, but I think the depth in this class is just fantastic.
Let's shift gears out of football for a few minutes and hit some of the other fall sports that are going on. Volleyball, always a big one around the region. Tell us, kind of fill everybody in on the state of volleyball in Northeast Florida.
Volleyball is, you know, these last few years have been very good. I mean, we just don't have state champions right and left in volleyball. It's been one of the more difficult sports to win a state championship in. If you look back a few years, Christchurch won a state championship in volleyball. Harvest played for a championship last year in volleyball. And those are the smaller schools. You have a Bishop Kenny a pedigree team there, and they won a state championship within the last 5 years. Ponte Vedra won a state championship 2 years ago. So you're seeing more of these programs come into in their own. You know, usually it was the Central Floridas and the South Floridas that were dominating on the high school volleyball circuit. And for years, it was just you could that was an area you could not crack if you were a North Florida team. Bishop Kenny and Bowles every year would get down to state championship matches, and they'd fall to one of those teams from Orlando or from South Florida, and it was just frustrating. But I think you see with the growth of organizations like JJVA, volleyball organization, I mean, stuff like that in the area that's building a foundation for these athletes to go in there and learn at a young age. And I think you're seeing that pay off, the investment in volleyball in the area with some of these state champions that just would not have happened before, but they're happening at a more frequent rate now than they've ever happened.
Who are some of the teams that we need to watch out for this year that could make another run at state championships? I know Ponte Vedra is always good. You mentioned Bishop Kenny and Bowles. Who are some of those teams we need to look out for?
You know, I look at Episcopal. They're a team that was right there knocking on the door last year. I think that's a team that is ready to take that next step. I think state semifinalist a couple times under Philippa Marks over there at Episcopal. I think Christchurch and Debbie Christian have done a really, really good job of building that program and maintaining that. And again, a state champion a couple years ago in Jacksonville when the tournament was held at UNF. Did not get back there last year, but again, had a very, very deep playoff run. And, the Ponte Vedra has done that. They've made it over that hump in volleyball. But, you know, I mentioned Episcopal. I think maybe a Fleming Island could be there this year, be one of those teams that makes that late run down there. And, public school volleyball championships are extremely rare around here. You've got Nice had one maybe 10, 11 years ago. Ponte Vedra had one. And it's just the public school teams have struggled to win their state championships when competing with those private schools. But, you know, we're seeing a little bit more of that public school kind of muscling its way in from the area and saying, hey, we deserve a place at the table too.
We'll switch gears again here with Justin Barney of Channel 4 and newsforjax.com here on the Jacksonville High School 912 podcast. Justin, this area is a huge swimming area. A lot of major champions in the swimming have come from here. Swimming is a fall sport here in Florida. And these guys are underway, and tell us a little bit about some of these kids that we need to look out for, because obviously it doesn't really heat up until regionals and districts and the playoffs, because it's more just trying to get your times, but then it really ramps up at that postseason standpoint.
Yeah, really. Swimming, I think, starts and stops with the bowls programs. I mean, they have just been absolutely dominant. A couple years ago, bowls surpassed the United States record for most consecutive boys state championships. Punahou, Hawaii, had won 29 in a row from 1958 to 86. Bowls surpassed that with its 30th in 2017. And, you know, I think everything is just so bowl-centric in this area. And it's the epitome of a program. I mean, you look at them and they've got Olympians, 50 Olympians, I think more than 50 Olympians have come out of bowls program. Obviously, we've got Ryan Murphy would be one of the bigger guys, and Joseph Schooling is another guy who, I think, he beat Michael Phelps in the Olympics a couple years ago and sent Phelps to a silver. And Caleb Dressel did not swim at bowls. He swam for the Bowl Sharks club team. He was actually a student at Clay. So we've got these just fantastic swimming stories coming out of this area. And, just bowls, what they've done, when you look at it in the grand scheme of things, I mean, state championships, and it's not really with one or two people. It's just that depth of the bowls program has just been fantastic and continue to do that. When you're, 31 state championships in a row for bowls, it's just fantastic. And I think the other programs in the area look at that and they say, wow, this is just, if we can compete against these guys, that's going to make us better and in the long run. And I think that's what a lot of teams in this area do, look at bowls, try to compete with the Bulldogs and say, if we can, come close to bowls, we know where we are as a program.
We'll go to cross country now. Sticking with the speed sports here, one of the more rigorous sports, because these guys and girls are running every weekend at the crack of dawn on Saturday mornings. Who are some of these teams that we need to look out for, and who are some of the top runners in the area that we'll hear about now, but probably also hear about in track season as well?
A lot of the talent for cross country is in St. Johns County, and you look at the Bartram Trails and the Creeksides, the Nice and the Ponte Vedras, and I think those are the teams, the public school teams. I mean, I think when you look at again cross country in the area, you've got to start with the bowls team. Charles Hicks had been one of the better runners in the area for quite some time. He's no longer there. And then you've got, some openings for bowls and some talented spots there that I think they're going to be filled by some younger runners at bowls. Bartram Trail, they were fifth in the state last year in Class 3A. So you're looking at some top teams in this area that not only have region hopes, the guys clashing like a Bartram Trail and a Creekside, but you're looking at state championship hopes too for teams like Nice. They were seventh in 3A last year in the boys. Ponte Vedra is, again, another postseason-bound team to watch out for. So when you're talking about teams, again, when you switch over to the girls' side too, I think it's some very similar teams there. Bowls, again, a state championship contender. Creekside girls, always a good team. And Claire Openshaw there is a very good runner, and Ashlyn Iliff at Creekside. So you've got those teams, and again, it starts, I think, with bowls, but a lot of those public school teams centered in St. Johns County. I don't think it's any kind of secret. When you have a good girls team, you have a good boys team as well. Those runners push each other, help each other, train with each other, and I think you see a lot of that, especially centered down there in St. Johns County.
We'll wrap up our sports preview here with golf. Men's and women's golf here in the area has produced a lot of talented young collegiate players in the last few years. We've seen some of these go on to play professionally. This year you've got another talented group coming through. And they will be gearing up for relatively quickly. They've been playing all summer in the normal junior tours, preparing for their high school season, which is kind of a sprint to get to the championship round. It'll all heat up with districts, then regionals, and then state. But obviously, this is a sport in the area that's got a lot of great teams and great kids that are doing phenomenal things.
Yeah, really. You know, and golf is one of those sports that, you know, it just doesn't heat up until those regional rounds. It's difficult to follow. You know, you've got the St. John's County Championship early on in the year, some other county championships, but I think everything golf-wise really kind of cranks up in that regional round, and see some of the better scores and better courses played at that time of year. You know, you look at a team like a Ponte Vedra. I think they've had four championships in their time, and it's just, again, I mentioned St. John's County, but a lot of that talent is clustered there in that St. John's County, in those areas, and in the private schools too. Providence has had some good runs over the last few years, but you look at the golf powers, and those guys and girls are centered down there in St. John's County. Some immense talent down there, and no question why. It's some great courses down there. Those kids start playing golf, junior golf, at an early age, and I think you see that when those players and those golfers play in high school golf, and not all of them do, not all of those junior golfers make that transition and play high school golf. You know, they forsake high school golf and go and play in that junior golf instead. So when you see those players stick with high school golf, which you have in St. John's County many, many years, you see those state championships as a reward of that.
Let's talk a little bit about some trends you see here that we see in high school athletics. There's a lot of talk last year with the football playoffs going to an old school BCS model, computer rankings, determining who was in the playoffs. And you had the incident where Jackson was 5-5 and didn't make the playoffs because the team was 0-10 and won a coin toss. I know there's been some tweaks to that, but now that system is also going to be used statewide again, but in all major team sports.
Yeah, it's you know, last year I think was kind of a microcosm of what was wrong with that new playoff format. You mentioned Jackson. They, you know, they were in the playoffs as of Friday night, their last game. I believe they beat Stanton, and it was a celebration for Jackson. And come to find out after the game, there was a miscalculation in one of the formulas, and they ended up having to go to a coin flip against a winless team. You know, Jackson was 4-5. Team Gadsden County, I believe, was 0-9 going into that, and they ended up winning a coin flip and going to the playoffs as a team that was winless. So very, very disappointing. And I think that result there, you know, there was nothing in the bylaws at the time for the FHSA to break a tie like this. So I think that game as a result really helped kind of tilt this new format that we have now and put it into place, so a situation like that would never happen again. So very unfair to how it worked out for Jackson last year. But, you know, for years there's been discussions about playoffs not being fair and teams from weaker districts that should not make the playoffs. You know, there have been a few years where Sandalwood has had a 7-3 team or an 8-2 team and not made the playoffs. Bartram Trail has done the same thing at 7-3 just because you happen to lose a district game. And I think a lot of coaches felt that was unfair. And I think that's helped stem the broach the topic of let's do something different in playoffs. And Frank Beasley several years ago at the FHSA came in and said, we want to shake this up and change it up and ensure that the best teams are making the playoffs and not sitting at home come November in the football playoffs. So they did that. And the 2-year testing phase of the points system for the playoff, I think, was largely successful. But I think coming in now this year, the FHSA has changed things to where it's now football RPI will help determine who gets in the football playoffs. You still have district champions in football, so the districts are not completely irrelevant now, but only the district champion makes it in. The others will be determined on RPI points, strength of schedule, you know, something similar to that schematic that goes into determining the wild card teams and putting them in the playoffs. So that debuts this year. And the biggest change, I think, in the other team sports that we're going to see, not necessarily an RPI situation, but, you know, districts have been a part of high school sports for many, many years, as long as I can remember. And in these other sports, the baseballs, the basketballs, the major team sports, you're not going to have to play district games anymore. So, you know, a lot of these teams now who are getting locked into, you know, maybe two games a year in their districts, you know, it does no good. You know, for a team like Oak Leaf and softball to have to play a league where you gain nothing, neither of those teams gain anything from playing one another twice a year. Doesn't do well for Lee, doesn't do well for Oak Leaf. So I think you avoid those situations where you're locked into playing teams that neither help you or hurt you in the long run of things. So you can play your schedule you create and you want to create and not locked into those district games. And come district time, you'll be seeded in the district tournament as you would any time in the past, except they seed you according to your strength of schedule, your RPI, your how you fared in the regular season. So I think that goes a long way in creating better regular season matchups and you know, maybe determining a district champion that would not have been in the situation as before. So district champions will still host their playoff games. I know that was a big kind of point of contention in this. You know, if a team from another region had a higher you know, maybe had a higher RPI than you or higher percentage ranking, but district champs will still host playoff games for that first round. So that was a big sticking point. So I think we're going to see a better playoff system. I think it's a refinement of what we've seen the last couple years with football. And I think in the long run, after people kind of figure this out and see the mathematical equations used in all this and how Max Preps does it, that's where the rankings are generated from, then I think there's going to be a little bit more kind of, comfort with this process after we see how it plays out this first year.
And so just so for the layperson, from a baseball standpoint, I'm team A and I've been playing, I'm in a district with team B. I don't have to play them at all. And the first time I may see them will be in the district tournament.
Correct. So, and you know, in the past, and some teams went away from this years ago, but you know, in the past, you'd have to play two district games against every team in your district. So, you know, say if you're in a 16 district, that locks you into double-digit games already. You know, and again, if you have really good teams in that district, that's great. But a lot of districts are top-heavy. You have one or two good teams, and the rest, that third team, maybe a middle team, and the bottom two teams are, you know, could be just absolutely terrible and not win a game. So when you're forcing teams to play those games, I don't know if that does anything for anybody. So I think taking away some of these locked games and, you know, maybe you can go out and schedule a team from out of area or something like that, mix your schedule up a little bit better. I think that's going to benefit everybody in the district. You know, maybe not the teams that have a difficult time filling out a schedule and, you know, getting games locally, but I think it's going to benefit in the grand scheme of things from top to bottom. I think it's a good change for everybody. And, you know, you're not penalized in a sense. A lot of coaches felt that, you know, why are you forcing me to play these games when we could get better games? We're going to no hit this team in baseball or softball. We're going to beat this team in mercy rule in basketball. So I think getting away from those types of games and letting coaches and athletic directors fill the schedule out with maybe more competitive games or natural rivalry games and, you know, still let the playoffs fall where they may is probably a win for everybody in this situation.
I agree. We heard from Nick Saban at his press conference on Saturday about his thoughts on scheduling, and he's an advocate for all college Power 5 schools to play 12 Power 5 games. But at the end of the day, you got to have a dance partner, too. It takes two to tango for a game. So the opportunity for these kids to play as good a schedule as you can put together is unique for everybody now, and it'll make for a better product and better programs for everybody too.
Yeah, you're right. You know, and you look at in a situation where you talk about kind of this untethered scheduling. I mean, I've written and talked about this kind of ad nauseum this season, but Trinity Christian's football team, you know, they're in a perfect situation where, you know, you go out, you're not in a district now in Class 3A where you've been assigned, and they've gone out and put together probably the most difficult schedule I've seen of any athletic team in this area since I've been doing this. And they replaced Rebalt this past week with Venice. Venice was a 12-2 team a year ago, and you know, 9 of Trinity's 10 teams on its schedule this year our players, excuse me, have won state championships in their time. So 9 of 10 teams, the worst team in terms of state championship on their schedule is Lee, and we know Lee is very good in football. So, you know, for Trinity Christian, now this is an extreme situation, but you know, Trinity has gone out and filled its schedule with the, you know, 10 of the best teams it could find, 10 playoff teams from last year. And I think that's what you're going to get, you know, in a sense, with new baseball and softball districts, you know, not having to play each other. So I think you're going to get better games in the long run out of this if you're not locking teams, you know, into 8, 10, 12 district games each year. And, yeah, I'm sure some of those teams will still play each other in the same district, but you're not going to have to now, and that's the biggest change.
One of the other trends, and you and I talked about this before we got started, is participation. We've seen the studies that have come out that participation in football is down, and it's kind of a red flag a little bit for parents now with the safety and everything with around football. Tell us what you're seeing, both on the what you're seeing from a national scale, but also from around the area as well.
You know, I think participation numbers in football have been on a not a drastic decline, but a kind of a, maybe like a slow drip or kind of a slow leak over the last 10 years or so from a national perspective. And statewide, I think you're seeing a little bit of that, decline. You know, maybe it's, you know, it's tough to say what that is attributed to. Is it parents more cognizant of head injuries in football or long-term effects? Probably a little bit of that. Is it, is it kids taking up other sports, lacrosse or, video games? I mean, that's always something to be aware of there too. That sounds crazy, but, you know, the video game industry has surged and, you know, it's, you know, you're seeing kids, teenagers make six-figure salaries playing video games now, and ESPN's gotten on board in that. And that's, you know, that's something I think that's, you know, maybe not as well known now as it should be or could be. But I think the video game industry, as crazy as that is to say, has sucked a little bit of that, the athlete off of the field, if you could say that. So I think there's not necessarily one thing. I know the football concussion issues are what you point to as being the biggest benefactor of participation declining in these sports. I don't know if that's necessarily the case. I think it's probably a combination of things and kids turning their attention elsewhere, maybe playing another sport, maybe not doing sports at all, maybe going and working more now as opposed to playing sports. I think it's a combination of many things, maybe headlined by that fear of safety and, the safety in sports and football. But I think it's kind of a collision of things is why you're seeing maybe that participation drop down a little bit.
Are you seeing the participation drop in any of the other big team sports?
You know, you look at, I think one of the biggest ones that you see an uptick in is lacrosse, and that's, you know, it's the drumbeat of lacrosse locally has grown immensely. I mean, schools, when you look back 20 years, there may have been, I don't know, 6-8 schools in this area, mostly public or private schools playing lacrosse, and now you're seeing lacrosse teams pop up everywhere. So I think you're seeing a little of that desire for contact sport remain, but again, it's something a little bit different. I think there's interest in that. I think it's popping up at public schools for both boys and girls. And if you look at how many teams have been added in the last, say, 10 years, it's just exploded locally. You've not seen that surge in soccer. You've not seen that in baseball because those are sports that are kind of linchpin sports. But lacrosse has certainly sucked away a little bit of that interest from some of those other contact sports for sure. I think statistically and both from a recognition standpoint and excitement standpoint, that's been the biggest growing sport, not only in our area, but I think statewide.
The growth of lacrosse nationally has really just taken off in the last decade. I know when we were at Jacksonville University and started the men's and women's lacrosse programs there, it was an unknown commodity at the time, and now it was kind of the forerunner of, hey, this sport is really going to take off in the state of Florida and the Southeast. And now you see college teams adding men's and women's lacrosse all over the Southeast. It's no longer just 6 states on the Mid-Atlantic that are having lacrosse. You've got now lacrosse teams all across the country.
Yeah, really. And, you know, you look at JU's kind of been a almost a torchbearer in this area for lacrosse. I think you need a college to help kind of spearhead that in your area. And I think JU's been one of those. I mean, they've had games televised and played some very big matches against out-of-state colleges coming here and playing them. And I think kids at high schools notice that. I think kids see that. And, ESPN has televised lacrosse matches, and it's a fast-paced sport. And it's still dangerous in a sense, but a lot less chance for significant injury in lacrosse than there is, say, football. So I think when you throw that, and, you know, the people were kind of dipping their toes in the water on lacrosse 10 years ago, and now they're jumping in the pool to swim with it. And I think you've seen lacrosse, even, you know, public schools may be slow to react on sports in general until they see it grabbing that curve. And it has certainly done that. I remember talking to an athletic director probably 10 years ago and saying, when are you guys going to add lacrosse? And the athletic director said, there's no way I'm adding lacrosse. And there's just no way. I can't. Very resistant to that fact. 5 years ago, I talked to that same athletic director, athletic director said, I can't ignore this anymore. This is a sport that people are banging down my door to play. And that school added lacrosse, and it's been a pretty good marriage so far. So I think you're seeing maybe a little bit of that resistance shed away and melt away. And I think kids in the area and their parents have certainly benefited from that.
Well, Justin, we appreciate the time. Thanks for coming on. Give everybody a reminder of how they can follow you on social media.
On social media, Twitter is probably where I'm the most active on. Try and keep local fans plugged in and on local kids and athletes. And that's Justin Barney TV. That's on Twitter, at Justin Barney TV.
Justin, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it. And keep up the good work with our friends at Channel 4.
Thanks for having me. Look forward to doing it again.
That's this week's episode of the Jacksonville High School 912 podcast. I'd like to thank all of our sponsors and Justin Barney from Channel 4 and newsforjax.com for joining us on this week's episode. Until next time, we'll talk to you soon here on the Jacksonville High School 912 podcast.
Thanks for listening to the Jacksonville High School 912 podcast, produced by Airstream Ventures. Today's High School 912 podcast episode was made possible by our sponsors, Baker's Sporting Goods, Bono's Barbecue, Duval Motor Company, the CSI Companies, Fortegra, Land South Construction, Adecco, the Arco Group, Farm Bureau Insurance, PGA Tour Superstore, U.S. Ashore, and Padgett & Padgett.